Arrears, which are when a government doesn't pay its bills, can undermine the trust of citizens in the government.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. I'm Bruce Edwards. In this program, we look at arrears.
There are also arrears on what we call transfers to schools, transfer to hospitals, and this clearly, you know, undermines the effectiveness of the social policy in countries. I'm Samuel Delepierre and I work in the African department.
My name is David Stenzel and I work also in the African department as economist for Senegal.
The dramatic drop in commodity prices in 2014 has had lingering effects in sub-Saharan Africa, one being a growing backlog of payments by governments to service providers known as arrears. But despite the prevalence of arrears in the region, their causes and effects are not well understood. The latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa looks at the social and economic impact of increasing arrears in recent years. Economists Samuel Delapierre and David Stenzel were part of the research team.
So what are arrears? And why should we classify them as something other than simply more debt?
Okay. So in our study, we focus on government arrears, on what we called primary spending, and arrears to agents within the country. So why they're not like debt is because they are what we call a form of forced financing, meaning that the agent to which the state accumulates arrears did not lend to the government willingly.
Right. So imagine if you are a government employee and you work for the government and you have signed a contract and you have the right to be paid on a certain day and the government is not paying for the services that you have provided. That would be something we would call an arrear.
So this is how you establish that this is kind of a forced financing?
Right. Normally, how it works is the government has to spend, and it can either finance this through revenues or it borrows money. And the main difference in arrears financing is if you are a government employee, you never chose to lend the government some money. You worked for them, you thought you would get something back, but you didn't. So this is why it's kind of forced, because that was not the original agreement you entered on.
And Samuel, what happens when the government doesn't pay its bills, and how does that trickle down into the broader economy?
So there are many different channels. The most obvious one, I would say, are the private sector. And David also already mentioned government employees and wages, which in some countries are quite important for the economy, given the size of the wage bill, for instance. So if you take the example of a private firm providing service goods or services to the government, if this company doesn't get paid, then at some point it may have to reduce its size, it may have to stop paying some of its employees, which will have, in the end, impact on aggregate demand and therefore on GDP. And there is another channel of transmission which is quite important, which is through the financial sector, because most of these companies borrowed money to banks. And if they are not being paid by the government, then they can face difficulties, you know, paying back their loan to the banks. And then the problem transfers into the banking system, which then translate into the economy if banks are can be in difficulty and have cannot provide credit to the economy, which in the end will, again, affect demand and GDP.
And you mentioned wages being very important in the economy. And the report shows clearly that governments tend to owe to private firms more than they do to government employees. What does that say about the political implications of the way that a government deals with its arrears?
So we have seen that in many countries, arrears mostly occur towards companies. And our sense is that the social impact of not paying wages to government employees can be a lot more significant than being overdue on some payments to private companies. And if you look at what kind of countries and which situations have accumulated arrears to government employees, it's often countries that have experienced a major political crisis like a coup d'etat and had major political upheaval and were not able to pay on a regular basis the wages anymore.
So there's a socio-political aspect to all this as well.
Right. This is not purely a financial problem. This is a problem in the society and for the stability of countries, that a crisis can erupt pretty quickly if the government is unable to service its bills.
And you know, we've mentioned before arrears to the private sector, arrears on wages, but there are also, and we've seen that in some countries, arrears on what we called transfers, meaning it could be transfers to schools, transfer to hospitals. The government is not providing the transfers that those agencies or subnational institutions would need. And this clearly, you know, undermines the effectiveness of the social policy in countries.
So a direct impact on development, really. And so how much difficulty did you have in compiling the data that you needed to conduct this research?
Yeah, that was one of the major challenges. I think what we felt when we started the project was that it's not just a technical problem, it affects the macroeconomic developments. But there is very little information out there on this, and this is probably due to the fact that it's so difficult to find data on this.
So did you end up building your own data set?
We built our own data set. That was the one of the main objectives of the study, is to get out and to leverage really the resources at the disposal of the IMF and to ask all our colleagues that work on sub-Saharan African countries to work together with the authorities to compile a data set. And we did that, and we established a data set with about 70% of the countries in sub-Saharan Africa in there from 2005 to 2018. Now, in this process, we also realized there are the known arrears and there are the unknown arrears. Mm-hmm. And that's why we emphasize also so much the unrecognized part, because sometimes it's just that one ministry engages in a spending commitment, but the Ministry of Finance is not properly informed. So if we as an IMF go to the country and ask in the Ministry of Finance how much spending is there, how is the situation, they might not necessarily get us the whole picture.
Hmm. And so what does your research show in terms of the impact of arrears on GDP?
So one big part of the study is just to do a stocktaking of arrears in the region. And what we see there is that based on the data we collected, as of end of 2018, the average stock of arrears in sub-Saharan Africa was about 3.3% of GDP. But of course, there are a lot of variations between different type of countries. So we found that in oil exporters, for instance, the stock is higher than for oil importers.
Why is it that oil exporting countries tend to have higher arrears?
So they experience quite a significant external and fiscal shock with the decline in oil prices back in 2014-15, and they had to go through fiscal adjustment. So basically their revenues went down, so they had to adjust their spending. But there is only that much that you can adjust in a short period of time. So some of them were not able to adjust sufficiently to the shock and had to run arrears.
And so, David, what are the numbers? What did your research find in terms of how arrears might affect GDP growth?
Right. So what we did is we took this data set that we compiled, and then we applied it and did some empirical exercise with it to find out the impact on economic growth, macroeconomic variables, but also some variables that give us an idea whether the impact is also broader on society at large. For instance, there are surveys that report trust on government. Mm. So you can set that in relation to arrears accumulation in countries. What we found, and I want to be careful here, it's important to stress that the data is far from perfect, but we wanted to still see whether our theoretical thinking about this, that this will have a negative impact on the economy, that this will undermine trust in government, and that this will also have an impact on the financial sector, a negative impact, whether this is validated by the data or not. And it clearly shows and comes out that this is the case. Now, giving you a precise figure is very hard. We estimate that in 1% of arrears accumulation in percent of GDP is associated with lower growth by about 0.3% of GDP. Mm-hmm. But again, this needs to be interpreted with a lot of caution. This is not a strict result and depends on the context and on many factors. But we definitely found a negative association between growth and arrears accumulation.
Okay, so how does all this affect the donor community and the potential access to external financing, which the donor community provides, when these countries might need it the most?
So a country that is hit by a significant shock, a country that faces a sudden decline, a massive sudden decline of its revenues, there is a limit to how much it might be able to respond to this without really undermining the social fabric of the country. So this adjustment to the new reality needs to be smoothed. And this is one of the things where the fund can also help. But we also think that if such a situation arises, it can be wise for the international community to respond quickly with additional financial support, because the alternative to this is probably that the country will not be able to do the adjustment as fast, and then you will have an arrears accumulation, and then you will need, after the fact, after all this happens, start a very difficult process of sorting all the financial relations out. And that's why we say there might be a case for very timely donor support.
And so how do you think countries can better manage arrears going forward? And how do you think this research might help them do that?
So what we tried to do in this chapter, and what really motivated the chapter in the first place, was to try to provide country authorities with some guidance on how to clear arrears. Of course, this is very country-specific, but we try to provide some guidance depending on some characteristics that country may have, whether they have fiscal space, whether the stock is large or not. And on the prevention side, we also provide some guidance on what areas of public financial management should be improved to prevent accumulation of arrears. And we also mention that sound fiscal policy can help prevent accumulation of arrears, meaning you can save some buffers in good times that you can use in bad times to prevent accumulation of arrears.
Well, one of the difficulties for governments that have accumulated a substantial stock of arrears and that are financially in a position that is not so strong is how to determine who to pay first and how to design a strategy over time when what will be repaid. And on that, we say you should try to design the strategy with a focus on inclusive growth. What do we mean by that? It should be favorable for the local economy so that it boosts growth and job creation in your country, but it also helps from a distributional perspective if you prioritize the spending. And what, for instance, we mean by that is that if you have a lot of outstanding claims of small and medium enterprises, for instance, that are really small-scale suppliers and that are very cash-constrained, then maybe you want to look into prioritizing the repayments of these small and medium enterprises.
Because they have such a large effect on household income.
Exactly, yes.
Thank you very much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was
Samuel Delepierre
and
David Stenzel,
both economists in the IMF's African department, talking about their study in the latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa on the impact of growing arrears. You can read the full report at imf.org. And if you like this podcast, look for us on Spotify or subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast.